Marshall Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade.
You hired me yesterday morning, but the real start of it was back in 45. Flashback.
Did you ever wonder what a bull must feel like when they let him into the ring? The bars go up, he's free, he rushes out figuring, "I've gotten away." And there in front of him are 50 guys with pitchforks and a man with an oversized knitting needle. He looks around and there's no way out. Last week I found out what that feeling is like.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolf? No, he isn't. Huh? Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, no, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Oh, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight.
Phooey.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, this business I'm in can get pretty silly sometimes. I can go along for a whole month and get by on nothing but meals at the automat and a dozen laughs a day. The funny ones usually pay just as well as the tough ones, but eventually somebody starts something that's about as funny as an open grave.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTR.
And now, here is OTR.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Detective Couples and, of course, The Adventures of Mike Shane. The episode is from 1945, July 9th, called Gossip Writer. And then The Adventures of Ellery Queen from 1947, March 5th, and Mr. and Mrs. North from January 3rd, 1950. The episode is entitled Accidents on Ice. And Let George Do It from July 19th, 1948. The episode is entitled The Joe Logan Case. And I wanted to talk about Kathy Lewis, who co-stars on Michael Shane, Private Detective. She was born in Spokane, Washington on December 27th, 1916. And she passed away, unfortunately, on November 20th, 1968, at the young age of 51 from cancer. Kathy Lewis was married to Elliot Lewis from 1943 to 1958, although they split on their 14th anniversary, and then divorce became final in 1958. Lewis moved from Spokane, Washington to the Pasadena Playhouse in Hollywood, California. She is most identified as Jane Stacy, rooming with a scatterbrained Irma Peterson, played by Marie Wilson, and she was on that show from 1947 to 1953, and went one more year after her with someone else playing a different role in My Friend Irma. And in the recognition of her work as Jane Stacy on My Friend Irma, she received the Ideal Secretary Award from the Executive Secretaries Club in 1948. She appeared on Sam Spade in I Love a Mystery, and she started out, her first appearance was with the First Nighter program. She worked with known talents such as Gregory Peck, Joan Crawford, Joseph Cotten, June Havoc, and Humphrey Bogart. Elliot Lewis and Kathy Lewis were in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, which was something that Elliot Lewis created, and also on Suspense, and they earned a combined income of $90,000 a year. And of course, the show that they appeared on together was called On Stage. She also did a lot of film work and a lot of television work, mostly in 1961 through the end of 1968 or close to that. She played a number of different roles. She was an avid interior decorator. She and Marie Wilson became close during the run of My Friend Irma. She called Marie Cookie. So anyway, enjoy Kathy Lewis in this episode of Michael Shane, Private Detective, from July 9th, 1945. And all the other shows I mentioned, enjoy those too. And I will see you all back here next week. God willing, and the creeks don't rise, that is.
The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company, present... The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. It's one of those drowsy summer afternoons, the sort of day executives spend on their favorite golf course, and office workers spend watching the clock. But not Mike Shane. He's hard at work. Hunched over a desk in his private office, Mike's mind is clicking like a Powell Street cable car. In fact, he's right in the middle of a crossword puzzle. Phyllis Knight, his capable assistant, is daydreaming in the outer office, gazing out a window at San Francisco's rooftops. A quiet day? Let's be frank. It's a downright dull afternoon. But wait.
Is this Michael Shane's office?
Yes. Do you wish to see him?
Idiotic question. Of course I wish to see him. In there, I suppose.
Wait. Well, of all the nerve.
Are you Michael Shane?
Oh, yes. And the young lady who was suffering from spring fever is my usually capable assistant, Miss Phyllis Knight. Won't you have a chair?
I'm Winifred Spencer.
The society columnist?
I believe that is the correct title, although most of my readers and radio listeners prefer to call me a gossip writer. I know something of your work as a detective, Mr. Shane.
Well, I'm just an amateur, Miss Spencer, in comparison with you, when I think of all the skeletons you've dug out of closets.
I'm afraid I've found one too many, Mr. Shane. I received this letter this morning.
I'm going to kill you. Your poison words have caused grief, wrecked fortunes, divorce, suicides. Now they're going to cause your death. There are scores who would like to kill you. None has a better reason than I, so I'm going to kill you.
What would you do if you received such a letter?
I'd read it the second time on a train, a fast train.
No, Mr. Shane. You'd go after the writer, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
You think you know the person?
I hope I to know tonight. Mr. Shane, will you and Miss...
Miss Knight?
Will you and Miss Knight be at my home at 8 o'clock? I'm having a dinner party, and I believe you will find the guests interesting. You may even find the person so intent on murdering me.
We'll be there, Miss Spencer. Oh, may I keep this note and the envelope, too, please?
Of course. And please dress. You're to be friends from out of town tonight.
We'll endeavor to be presentable.
And I trust prompt. Goodbye, Mr. Shane and Miss Knight.
Goodbye.
Mike? You didn't ask her any questions.
Well, for the present, Angel, I'd rather she did the talking.
I believe she was actually frightened.
Oh, she'd scared stiff, honey. Her chickens are coming home to roost. Half the people in San Francisco, the so-called better half, would like nothing better than to send flowers to her funeral.
Yeah, I guess that's true enough. Now, you can't grow up on the right side of the tracks, tattle on your friends, and not get your fingers burned. Hey, isn't there a brother somewhere in the background?
A bit younger than the old dame. Went through his money fast, and now they say he's going through hers. I believe he lives with her.
Let's have a look at the note, huh? Envelope plain, business type. Addressed to the old girl at her office. Mailed at 6 p.m. last night.
You notice anything odd about the paper?
Let me look at it against the light. Watermark business stationery, Mike. This has been torn. The letterhead's been torn off.
Right you are, Angel. Now look at the typing.
It looks almost like a professional job to me.
Could be. But, come on, let's do a bit of research on San Francisco's society.
Oh, that won't be necessary, Mike. I'm one of Winifred's, constant readers. Just ask me questions.
I'll remember that when the time comes.
Now, please, Mr. Shane, I'd like the rest of the afternoon off.
We get a red-hot client and you want to play.
No, dear, I want to get my hair done. We're stepping out in society tonight.
Say, I wonder if I got a black tie.
It's an old mansion. Look at the iron deer on the lawn, Mike. And the bay window in front.
Not as big as the Palace Hotel, but older. Anybody with iron deer on the lawn is just inviting murder.
Yeah. Ooh, it gives me the creeps. Ivy all over the walls.
Probably some growing inside, too.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's find out. Ring the bell.
You mean lift the knocker.
Oh. This way, please.
Bring them in here, Henry.
This way, please.
Oh, I'm glad you came early.
Nice to be here, Miss Spencer. What an unusual house.
Oh, yes, this old house is filled with memories. The Spencers have lived here since 1850.
Say, that's a fine old square rigger model on the mantelpiece there.
My grandfather sailed the original around the Horn. He brought most of the furniture you see here with him.
Oh?
This desk was one of his prized possessions.
Well, it looks like it's being put to use these days, too. Typewriter, lots of books. Is this your study?
No, I do my work at the office. My brother, Seward, spends quite a bit of time in here. Seward likes to think of himself as a writer.
Is your brother here tonight, Miss Spencer?
Yes, with his latest conquest, a Miss Melody. You'll meet them at dinner.
Oh.
We'd better be getting back to the dining room. It's time for the guests.
I think there's somebody behind that curtain.
Huh?
Of course there is. The curtains hide a service entrance. Come in, Henry.
Pardon me, Miss Spencer.
Oh.
May I announce dinner?
Yes, Henry. We're ready.
Oh?
Will you please stop boring one another and listen? I've a surprise for you. This is my broadcast night, and it's almost time for me to go on the air.
You're going to do your broadcast right here?
No, I recorded it this afternoon. But we're going to listen to it on the radio. I thought it would be interesting to have the people I'm going to talk about as my guests. That's why most of you are here tonight. I'm sure you'll find what I have to say interesting. Mr. Davis, Hugh, please step into the drawing room and turn on the radio. I don't want anyone to miss a word of this broadcast.
Certainly. You might have spared us this, Winifred.
I'm through protecting you, Seward.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and be made a fool of by my own sister.
You'll remain right where you are.
What's the station, Winifred? And for heaven's sakes, how do you turn this antique on?
Oh, bother, I'll come and do it. I believe he was afraid to turn it on.
What's this all about, Mike?
It looks like she's going to tittle-tattle on Seward and her guests.
Oh. Hey, Mike, look at Seward. He's ready to explode.
He's not by himself, honey. Most of the guests seem to have high blood pressure.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. There's Mr. Davis. He's standing there by the door laughing.
Huh? It looks like the joke's on Winifred. I don't believe the radio's going to work.
Well, what seems to be wrong with the radio?
Well, that's what Winifred's trying to find out. She should have bought a new one years ago. Are you sure it's plugged in, Winifred? Well, I guess we're going to have to listen to her.
And now, your society reporter, Winifred Spencer. Good evening. This is Winifred. Have I been gathering tidbits about people you know? The first item tonight concerns an immediate member of your reporter's family, my brother Seward. He has played with fire once too often, and I regret to announce that my brother has
listen.
Gone too
far. Come on, Morrow.
She's got no right to talk to you.
There goes Seward into the drawing room, and Miss Melody right after him.
Oh, come on, Phil. Let's get in there. Hey, hey, what goes on here? It's Winifred. She's dead. She's dead. Hmm. A knife in her back? She's dead, all right.
Oh.
return to Michael Shane and his adventures in just a moment. Friends, if your automobile engine has a habit of giving a death rattle when you step on the accelerator, the fault may lie with the motor oil you use. You see, most rattling and pinging in an engine is due to excess carbon. And contrary to popular opinion, nearly all carbon formed in automobile engines comes from the lubricating oil and not from the gasoline, as so many people think. Now, no two motor oils form the same amount of carbon. That's why we say your carbon troubles may be due to the brand of lubricating oil you buy. Because, and this is a proved laboratory fact, Triton motor oil forms less carbon than any of the seven leading motor oils sold in the West. Yes, that's right. Triton cuts down carbon. The secret of Triton's superiority lies in Union Oil Company's exclusive propane solvent refining process. That means all harmful asphalts, waxes, and sulfur have been removed, leaving a pure 100% paraffin-based lubricating oil. An oil that will furnish hundreds of miles of safe, dependable lubrication. So friends, with parts and mechanics as scarce as they are today, why not take advantage of the unusual protection you can get from Triton Motor Oil? You can buy Triton at all Union Oil Minuteman stations. Just look for the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Thank you. The inspector is on his way. Mike has announced his identity and taken over. 10 minutes has elapsed since someone murdered Winifred Spencer in her drawing room, not more than 12 steps from where a dozen guests sat finishing their dinner.
May I have your attention, please? Now, I'm sure you want to return to your homes, and there's no reason why those of you who were at the table when Miss Spencer met her death should remain. You may leave now before the police arrive, if you wish.
Hey, the inspector isn't going to like this, Mike.
Hmm?
You said yourself that there were 10 people here who had reason to murder Miss Spencer.
I said there were at least 10 people who would love to murder her. Hmm. Whoever killed the old dame had a lot stronger motive than revenge, Angel. I let them go because they were cluttering up the place.
Now, just the same, the inspector isn't going to like it.
Watch this, I'm not going to like?
No. Huh? Mike got big-hearted and let some of the guests go home.
We can always bring her back, Phil. Who's left?
That's Miss Spencer in the chair with a knife in her back, Inspector. Oh. I believe I told you on the phone that her brother Seward took a powder.
Yeah.
The lady on the sofa is his...
I'm Merle Melody, and I'm sticking around a little. Seward will be back. He just lost his temper and couldn't face the guests.
Lost his temper, huh? Oh, tut-tut.
And the gray-haired gentleman who looks like a banker is a banker. Family friend named Hugh Davis. He's coming over to say hello.
Glad you're here, Inspector. I'm Hugh Davis. Mr. Shane has told you...
Yeah, that's why I'm here. I understand you're an old friend.
I suppose I know Winifred as well as anyone in San Francisco. I've been the Spencer's banker for 20 years, Inspector.
Hmm? Did you handle Seward's financial affairs too, Mr. Davis?
Yes, although I must say they became rather tangled.
Miss Spencer mentioned something about his spending a great deal of money on his new girlfriend.
The charming Miss Melody. None of us approved of that infatuation. All this might never have happened.
Well, you'd better tell us all about it, Mr. Davis.
I'd much rather discuss the matter when Seward is present.
Mr. Spencer isn't here. He's flown the coop, so let's have it now. What about Seward and his money?
It wasn't his money. Oh, Winifred was generous with him, generous to a fault, in my opinion. Seward spent the last of his fortune more than a year ago.
So he has been living off his sister, eh?
Yes, Mr. Shane.
Well, it's not a very pretty picture, but you can't hang a man for sponging. Something I'd like to know, Mike.
Yeah, what, Angel?
I'd like to know what Winifred Spencer said about Seward in her broadcast tonight. It ended rather suddenly here.
I picked up the script on the way over, Phil. Just a lot of society gab and a sprinkling of sneers. Right people in the wrong places.
Uh-huh. What'd she say about her brother and his girlfriend?
Let's see. Oh, yes, she said Seward had stepped out of bounds with a chorus girl. They were dropping his name from the social register. And she said she doubted that Miss Melody would be able to support Seward in the style he'd been accustomed to.
Oh, so sister was going to cut him off. That right, Mr. Davis?
Yes, they had a bitter quarrel a couple of days ago.
Will Seward inherit Miss Spencer's money, Mr. Davis?
I think the proper person to advise you on that matter is Miss Spencer's attorney.
Maybe you're right, Davis, but as Miss Spencer's banker, I believe you can answer the question.
Well, I'd much prefer that Seward was present, but... Well, I don't suppose this is any time to be guarding family secrets.
You're right so far. Now, look, if you know anything, spill it.
I doubt that there will be more than several hundred dollars in this old house for Seward to inherit.
What? Well, what happened to the old lady's fortune?
Well, I'd much rather wait. Well, it'll have to come out sooner or later. Winifred and Seward have had the same safety deposit box at the bank for years. Just 3 days ago, Winifred came to my office highly agitated. More than $200,000 in negotiable bonds were missing from the box.
And just what has your bank done about finding the 200 grand in bonds?
Mr. Shane, there are times when a bank has to use discretion. We hope to recover Miss Spencer's property without undue publicity or scandal. That's one reason I sent Winifred to you this afternoon.
So, Brother Seward raided the box.
That is all too evident.
There's another thing quite evident, sir. If you and Miss Spencer hadn't been so cagey ducking the very thing that little Winifred dished out, scandal, she might be alive right now.
We thought we were doing the right thing.
Well, that's water under the bridge.
Mike.
Hmm?
Do you notice anything missing from the room?
Well, sure, Angel, the body. The police doctor just left a few minutes ago.
No, not that body. Merle. Merle Melody.
Huh? Holy smoke, she has gone.
You better search, Mike, with the murderer still on the loose.
There's only one way she could have gone, through here. The door's open. Try that room, Inspector. I'll try this one.
Right.
Here she is, on a bed.
Is she alive?
Well, I don't know yet. Yeah. Yeah, she's breathing.
Out like a light. Oh, sleeping pills.
I guess so. Pulse is slow, but regular.
Didn't want to answer questions, eh? All right, let her sleep.
Let's have a look around while we're back here, Mike.
You read my mind, Inspector. Which way is the kitchen, Davis?
Next turn to the left and down the hall.
Here it is.
It's as big as a barn.
And just as empty.
The sergeant came back here when he searched the house. He probably sent the servants to their quarters.
What's that?
What have you picked up, Sergeant?
I just nabbed the butler, letting the guy in the back door.
Bring him into the light.
Wow. Look who's with him. The missing brother.
Thanks, Sarge. I'll take him.
All right, sir.
Bring him into the drawing room, Inspector.
Here we are. All right, talk.
Where have you been all evening, Mr. Spencer?
What are police doing all around the house? Where's Winifred? What have you done with Miss Melody?
I'll have the answer to my question first, Mr. Spencer. Where have you been?
I've walked for miles. I don't know where I've been. You were here when I lost my temper and dashed out, Mr. Shane. Winifred had no right to humiliate me before my friends. I hated to come back here.
Then why did you come back?
I don't know. This is my home. Where is Winifred, Merle?
Miss Melody's asleep, Mr. Spencer. Your sister is dead.
What?
Murdered.
No. Well, that isn't true. I saw her sitting in that chair when I ran out the front door.
Yes, Spencer, she was there. It also looks as if you stopped long enough to stick a knife into her back.
No. No, I didn't do it. I might have wanted to, but I didn't.
Just a minute, Henry. Where are you going?
To my quarters, sir.
You'd better stick around. Say, where were you when Miss Spencer's broadcast began?
Oh, yes, I recall. I was preparing to serve the coffee, sir.
I saw you going toward the side entrance to the drawing room when Miss Spencer left the table to turn on the radio.
Oh. So you entered the drawing room by the side door, just ahead of Miss Spencer?
I did not, sir. The door was closed. I stood outside listening. I never miss one of Miss Spencer's broadcasts.
Why did you lie to me about serving the coffee?
I was frightened.
You don't look like the type that frightens easily. Were you outside with Mr. Spencer?
No, I heard someone at the back. It was Mr. Spencer. I let him in.
Didn't the sergeant tell you to stay in your room?
I have always answered the door, sir.
That's probably the only truthful answer you've given me. Inspector.
Yeah?
Want to help me with an experiment?
What are you going to do, Mike?
I'd like to refresh my memory, Inspector. Let's all go into the dining room. Now, there's one thing I want to find out. All right, everybody, please take the places you had when Miss Spencer turned on the radio.
I see.
Mr. Davis, when I give the word, you are to get up and walk to the radio in the drawing room.
Yes?
Wait a few seconds and call just as you did at dinner.
Very well.
Bill, you be Miss Spencer and answer him.
All right, Mike.
Henry, you had better take your eavesdropping post by the side door, if that's where you really were.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Spencer, when Mr. Davis returns to the dining room, I want you to run into the drawing room.
Oh, do I have to go through with this again?
Yes, you have to go through with it again.
No, I can't. I can't.
Oh. What? Seward. Seward has fainted.
Was that what you wanted to find out, Mike?
No. No, that wasn't on the schedule, Angel.
rejoin Mike and Phyllis in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, an automobile radiator that's clogged with rust and scale is a menace to your gas coupons. Yes, that's right. You see, choked water lines block the easy flow of the water. That means your motor heats up more than it should. And that spells trouble, because motors, when too hot, can waste gasoline. Now, another thing which many people overlook is that cars driven around town with constant starting and stopping get hotter than those driven on the open road. So, even if you aren't planning any trips this summer, it's a good idea to drop in at a Union Oil station and ask the Minuteman to clean out your radiator. This service takes but a few minutes and works like magic. Union radiator flush is harmless to metal, but its special solvent action cuts scale, rust, and grease right out of choked radiator cores and water lines. Then, when this foreign matter is cleaned out and the Minuteman fills your radiator with fresh, clean water, you can be sure it will really circulate with a fast, steady flow. So, for cooler driving, economical mileage, just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask for Union Oil Radiator Service. Thank you. A couple of minutes has passed. Seward has been placed on a leather couch. Mike, Phil, and the others are gathered around the couch.
A rather cruel thing to do, Mr. Shane. Pretending to make Seward go through with all that nonsense.
It wasn't nonsense, Mr. Davis. Here, loosen his collar.
Henry, is there any brandy in here?
I'll fetch it, Mr. Davis. It's in the pantry.
Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. He's coming, too.
No, I can't. I can't. What? Oh, I fainted.
Yes, yes, you fainted. All right, now maybe you'll tell us why you killed your sister. What you did with those bonds.
I didn't kill Winifred. I tell you, I didn't. And I don't own any bonds. My glasses... I've lost my glasses.
Mr. Shane, you've tried your methods. May I try mine?
What are your methods, Mr. Davis?
I'd like to talk with Seward for a few minutes, alone. I've known him since he was a boy.
That's up to the inspector.
Why not let him talk, Mike? My men have the place corked up like a bottle.
Well, okay, but remember, we'll be just outside the door. This, Inspector.
But, Mike, all we got on Spencer is circumstantial evidence. The fact he was the last one with his sister.
Don't forget the $200,000 in bonds.
I'm not, Phil, but with this kind of evidence, I need a confession.
We'll get it, Inspector, from one of the three.
Three?
Yeah, sure. Seward, the butler, and Davis.
Davis has a pretty fair alibi, Mike. You told me yourself he was back at the table seated before Winifred Spencer turned on the radio.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. He was sitting on my left.
Yes, yes. He was in the dining room, but he's still on my list. Now... Let me see. I know it.
What are you muttering about, Mike?
10 steps, 12, maybe 14 seconds. That's it. That's it. Why didn't I think of it before? Come on, let's go. It's in the bag, Inspector.
Maybe you got it locked up, Mike, but I...
Oh, there you are, Inspector. It didn't take long.
Well, Davis, the conference over?
What's that you've got in your hand, Mr. Spencer?
Well, you thought I should sign it. The bonds...
I'll explain. Seward wanted to make a statement after we'd talked a bit.
All right, what about?
Seward and I talked things over, and I typed a statement which he dictated to me.
Yes, I wanted to clear up any...
Let me see that paper. Did you read this before you signed it, Mr. Spencer?
Well, I can't read without my glasses. Hugh read it to me.
I thought so. Mr. Spencer, this is a signed confession to the murder of your sister.
So what? You did get it, Davis.
He tricked me. He told me to say Winifred took the bond. I didn't kill her.
Grab him, Inspector. No, no, not Seward. You gave him in.
What's the matter with
you? Hold him. Let me search him, Inspector.
You...
Well, here's a pair of glasses.
This is outrageous. Those are my glasses.
Like to try them on for size? You couldn't get them on with a pair of pliers. They're Seward's glasses. You picked them up when you helped carry them in here.
You're crazy.
Davis, you killed Winifred Spencer when you found out you couldn't hoodwink her any longer about the theft of those bonds, the bonds you stole.
Are you out of your mind, Shane? I was standing where you could touch me when Winifred was killed.
You killed Miss Spencer. You tried to hang the murder and the theft of $200,000 in bonds on young Spencer. You stole his glasses, persuaded him to sign a confession he couldn't even read.
You'll find such absurd surmises difficult to prove, Mr. Shane. I couldn't have killed Winifred, and all of you know it.
Mike, I really don't see how it was possible.
I was with you in the dining room when Winifred was killed. I was standing within plain sight of at least a dozen people.
Can you answer that one, Mike?
I don't have to, Inspector. It has nothing to do with the killing. I think you're all familiar enough with the radio set to know that after you switch it on, it takes a few seconds to warm up.
A few seconds, yes. But I was in the dining room considerably more than a few seconds, Mr. Shane. Besides which, I was carrying on a conversation with Winifred, in full view of you all.
A one-sided conversation. Winifred didn't answer.
Very convenient of you to think of that now, Mr. Shane. But hardly enough to charge me with murder.
I'm afraid Mr. Davis has a point there, Mike.
Mr. Davis has a point in that I was half asleep when I should have been wide awake. I heard the noise that was the clue as to who killed Winifred Spencer. All of you who were in the dining room heard it, too. But no one thought anything about it.
You mean the snap of the radio switch? Well, I heard Miss Spencer turn it on, too.
But that's just where we were all wrong, Angel. We didn't hear the radio switch when Miss Spencer turned it on. Mr. Davis?
Yes?
This is what you did. You saw that the radio was plugged into a light switch. So you switched off the light. That meant that when Miss Spencer switched on the radio, nothing happened. You grabbed her, slapped your hand over her mouth, and stabbed her. Then you walked to the dining room door, stood there talking. And when sufficient time had elapsed, sufficient time that you felt you had an alibi, you slipped your arm behind the wall, pulled on the light switch, and about 10 to 15 seconds later, the radio came on.
Anything to say to that, Mr. Davis?
From the look on his face, you must have been right, Mike.
Oh, I know I'm right. His efforts at blaming young Spencer will hold up in any court. Okay, here's yours, Inspector.
Am I being kidnapped? This isn't the way home.
I've got to get that society clam bake off my conscience, honey. We're heading for Fisherman's Wharf.
Oh.
Maybe a nice cold lobster.
Mm. Jeepers. We forgot all about Merle Melody.
Oh, the sleeping beauty? Well, she's young Spencer's problem now.
Mike,
What
made you so sure Davis was the murderer?
Oh, he kept tipping his hand.
Yeah, but that radio business was a clever alibi.
Not too clever, Inspector. He counted on the noise covering up the click of the switch. His timing was bad. It didn't.
Yeah. We both heard the snap, but we weren't thinking fast. Well, maybe you can tell me one other thing, Mike.
I'll make a stab at it, Angel.
Oh, don't use that word.
Hmm?
I only wanted to know if they serve Crab Louie where we're going.
When you look like that, Angel, they'll serve you anything.
Oh.
Again next week at 8 o'clock for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as the inspector. Tonight's story was written by Tom Petty and based on a character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company.
This is Michael Shane with a message from Director of Fleet Maintenance, Admiral V.D. Chaplin, United States Navy. It reads, quote, "To all welders, riggers, electricians, coppersmiths, and other skilled shipyard repairmen. Subject, fleet maintenance. There is a serious skilled labor shortage in all West Coast shipyards due to heavy battle damage suffered by our warships in recent weeks. For 3 straight months, Nip planes have hammered at our fleet off Okinawa. One day alone, late in May, 11 of our ships were hit. Not every day is that bad, but every day is bad enough. Until these smashed ships can be patched up or rebuilt, they are as total a loss to the fleet as if they were sunk. This is an urgent appeal to all skilled workers who may be able to qualify as shipyard repairmen to apply at once to the nearest United States Employment Service office," unquote. Well, that pretty well tells it, friends, except to say that if you can qualify as a shipyard repair worker, apply at once. You'll find the number
of the nearest United States Employment Office in your phone book.
This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Ladies and gentlemen, as responsible parents, you never think of allowing your children to play with poison. And as responsible Americans, it's your duty to protect them from the dangers of the poison we call prejudice. Here in America, racial and religious hatred does exist, sustained by the political adventurers and plain crackpots who are willing to scrap the democratic way of life to attain their own ends. Prejudice in America is centered in their adult philosophy. But unless we guard ourselves and our families, it can find its way into our own lives. Then the poison would do its work, undermining America's unity, sabotaging our prestige abroad, and wrecking our ideal of individual freedom. In your family life, you can effectively carry on a campaign against prejudice. Our youngsters grow up with a pride in their country. Teach them that part of that pride is our tradition of accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, not on the basis of race or religion or color. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Hey, everyone. This is OTR Rob. I just thought I would step in here to talk a little bit about the armchair detective judge, which is Gypsy Rose Lee. She was legendary for many reasons. One of them is that she changed the way strip clubs operated and dancers and strippers behaved on stage. And in many cases, Gypsy Rose Lee believed in total nudity, and she wanted to display that in her act. And she's gotten raided in a couple of clubs, but she was vehement in her belief that there was nothing wrong with nudity, and it should be praised and not thought of as dirty or obscene or anything in that regard. She would later on in the 60s have her own afternoon 90-minute talk show, and she preceded Dinah Shore in this respect. Dinah Shore came after Gypsy Rose Lee and did a talk show of her own, which lasted a long time. Both shows actually kind of coincided with one another. Gypsy Rose Lee was really on even after Dinah Shore started her show. But Gypsy Rose Lee was one of the first ones to syndicate a talk show, which she did out of Los Angeles. She was very gregarious, to say the least, and had excitement about everything on the show. So that really made her show really quite popular, was her very gregarious personality, let me say. And so enjoy this, Ellery Queen. This sounds strange to me. The show sounds like it was created in Britain. I'm not certain, since there's no commercials and there's no reference to anything at the end who actually produced this. But it's a different Ellery Queen that I've been presenting before. So I'm not really sure the origin of this particular episode. If someone knows, email me at otrrob50@gmail.com and mark the heading on your email as The Adventures of Ellery Queen, and then state what you know. That would be great if you did. Anyway, enjoy it.
Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight we bring you another thrilling adventure of Ellery Queen, the celebrated fighter of crime. Representing you home armchair detectives is world-famous personality Gypsy Rose Lee. You'll hear from her later, but now here's your host, Ellery Queen.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In tonight's case, my secretary, Nikki Porter, finds herself hunted by the police. She is wanted for murder. I call it The Adventure of Nikki Porter, Suspect. Inspector Queen of the New York Police.
No, just a thing. Thought you were pretty early, son.
Early? I overslept. I'm supposed to meet this train.
Somebody you know coming in?
Nikki Porter. She's been visiting her family, and now I've missed her. All the passengers are out.
Not all, Ellery. Here. Down here.
The train? Huh. What happened here, anyway?
Oh, guy just down here with half his head blown off. He's in a compartment.
Six slugs in his head. Who was he, Dad?
Ernie Buffle, Midwest bank robber.
Gun taken away, I suppose?
Mm-hmm. But we found these three $1,000 bills, Ellery, on the floor of this compartment.
Let me see those bills, Dad. Yeah, I thought so. Look at these serial numbers. These $1,000 bills are part of the money.
Yeah, stolen from the Second Commercial Bank of Chicago night before last.
Correct. So it was Buffalo pulled that bank, Sam, huh? On the line with his loot. How much did he get away with that?
$258,000.
Uh-huh. That leaves only $255,000 we've still got to recover.
Yep, looks like it.
Was this Buffalo's compartment, C in car 103?
No, this compartment was occupied by a lady. The porter noticed her get off before he and the conductor found Buffalo's body. Buffalo had a lower in the next car.
A woman, huh? Young?
About 5'3" and in her 20s and pretty. Red hair, wore a muskrat coat, carried a dark blue suitcase, and the compartment is full of her fingerprints. No. Don't touch that compact, Hillary.
Oh, the compact belonged to the girl, Dad?
Yes, sir. Well, it's easy enough to figure. With this compact of hers, her prints, the description we've got, it's only a matter of time, Ellery.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Well, you don't need me in on this, Dad.
Going to Nikki's place to take your medicine for missing her, huh?
Nikki. Nikki, wake up. Nikki. Nikki, it's Ellery.
Ellery?
Nikki, listen to me. Nikki, will you listen to me?
I was in Kansas City.
Nikki, you left Kansas City. You wired me yesterday from Chicago that you'd arrive in New York at 8:30 this morning.
The train?
Were you in a compartment, Nikki? Tell me.
Compartment?
Car 103, compartment C?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
I'm so sick. I ache. Oh, Ellery, what happened?
Don't you know, Nikki?
I can't seem to remember anything.
Well, don't you remember leaving the train?
No. Oh, look at me. All dirty.
You were in a struggle of some sort, Nikki.
Struggle?
You suffered a violent physical as well as nervous shock. It brought on a temporary amnesia, Nikki.
Struggle? That man.
Then you're beginning to remember. Now, when did you first see this man, Buffalo?
Buffalo?
Yeah, the man with the broken nose, Nikki. He's a criminal wanted for bank robbery.
Bank robber? So that's why he...
Nikki, he's lying on the floor of that compartment dead, shot to death. You left your compact there. Your fingerprints are all over the place. Nikki, you're in a jam, so talk, will you?
I killed him.
Oh, Nikki, how did you kill him? Oh, Nikki, any minute now, Dad will realize that the compact, the prints, the description all add up to you. He may be on his way here now. Will you tell me what happened before he gets here?
All right, Ellery. The train had stopped at 125th Street. Then it started again. I'd already packed my suitcase and I was about to close it when my door opened and... Is that the porter? I'll have my bag ready in a moment. What do you want?
Don't call for help and don't yell.
Who Who's yelling?
Don't shut that suitcase.
Would you mind waving that gun elsewhere?
Do what I say and you won't get hurt. See this package?
Package?
Put it in your suitcase.
You're giving me something?
Put it in your suitcase.
Well, now what do I do? Write you a thank you note?
Close it up.
Close the back. Uh-huh.
Now get this. In 5 minutes, we'll be in New York. You'll carry your suitcase off the train yourself. Don't give it to a red cap, understand? Walk up to the check room at the west end of the station and check the bag. I'll be right behind you.
Suppose somebody I know is meeting the train.
Ditch it. When you get the baggage check, go to the nearest cigar stand and buy a packet of cigarettes. Leave the check on the counter, careless, like you dropped it. Then go on about your business.
And you'll pick it up.
That's the idea, baby.
Oh. Well, there's not very much I can do, is there?
Smart gal.
Why, we're in the tunnel. I'm actually shaking. do you have a cigarette?
Yeah, sure.
It's very kind of you to look through your pockets for one, because it gives me a chance to grab your gun.
Why, you... Okay. Leave the sucker out of me, will you? Get up off that floor. We're almost in. Get up or I'll...
Yes? Go on, Nicky.
All I know is I was reaching for the gun as he was bending over me. That's the last clear recollection I have, Ellery. That and the shots.
All in his head. All at close range.
I see I brought the suitcase home. Is the package in it, Ellery?
No, it isn't, Nicky.
It isn't?
But there's no question what it contained. The $258,000 Buffalo stole from the Chicago bank night before last.
I wonder what I did with it.
$3,000 of it was found on the floor of the compartment. And, Nicky.
What now?
I just found this in the pocket of your fur coat.
A gun?
All 6 shots fired. I'm afraid, Nicky, this was the gun that killed Buffalo. His own gun.
Oh, Ellery.
Can't you remember anything? What you might have done with the rest of the money? Or...
If I only could. Before the inspector and... Oh, Ellery.
The door.
The police. The police after me.
Now, look. You're to tell Dad the truth. Meanwhile, I'll be backtracking, trying to find the money. Don't give up, understand? Just hang on.
All right, Ellery.
That's the stuff. I'm coming. Coming, Dad. I'll come right in.
Drop the rod.
Ellery?
You heard him, Mark. Drop the rod.
Sure. It's not loaded anyway.
I got it, Reader.
Yeah, it's Ernie's gun, all right.
That was a good hunch, Frank. Following this guy from the station.
You, shut the door.
Ellery, I don't understand. Who are they?
You followed me here from Grand Central?
Yeah. We're 3 friends of Ernie Buffalo's.
We came in on the same train from Chicago.
We hung around the station when... Ernie didn't get off the train. You, the baby doll, come here.
Me? Well, what do you want?
I spotted you on the train. You were in that compartment. How'd you get Ernie in there? Huh?
I didn't. You knocked off my Ernie. You...
Mickey.
Let him go.
Tie him up.
Yeah. Stand still, will you?
Baby doll... Before I go to work on you, tell me, what did you do with the dough?
I don't know. I don't know.
You're lying.
Can't you see she's telling the truth?
Steady, pal. Ain't quite finished tying you.
Girlfriend, I'm going to give you one more chance. Just tell us where you hid that dough from the bank. Okay.
Stop it. Can't you see she's fainted?
Nuts. Frank, You're sure it ain't here?
It ain't in the room. It ain't on either of them.
Stein. Wake up.
Wait a minute.
Look. I'm Ellery Queen.
The detective?
And this is my secretary, Nicky Porter. I give you my word, Nicky doesn't know where that money is. Amnesia. She can't remember a thing since she left that compartment.
What do we do, Reed?
Ah, let's knock off these two and blow. We'll find a door ourselves.
Where, Frank? But you just gave me an idea, Mr. Queen. You got quite a rip. You're pretty good at finding out stuff. Okay. You find that dough for us.
Wait a minute, you nuts.
Shut up, Frank. How's it figure, Rita?
Why, Jupe, he'll find the dough for us because we're going to be keeping this doll of his company in a nice, safe place. Get it, Mr. Queen?
I get it.
If you don't, Nicky gets what you gave Ernie Buffle, but slower.
I'm thoroughly convinced, Rita.
And you don't get all the time in the world. 12 hours, Queen. That's all.
I understand, Frank. How do I get in touch with you?
You'll get a phone call at midnight tonight.
Cops! Rita, let's scram.
Grab the doll, Jupe. Carry her to the car.
Come on, baby. Off the bed.
Frank, you covered us.
Jupe, step on it. Oh, she ain't no pretty
girl. Out the back way, Jupe. Come on, Frank.
I'm coming. But before I go, Mr. Queen, I'm going to give you something to remember us by. So you'll know we're not kidding.
I wish my hands were free.
Wait. So here's the midnight.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, you have the first part of our mystery. You'll hear more shortly.
Phone yet? It's midnight.
No, sir. No call yet.
But I wouldn't get back in time.
How's your head, sir?
Oh, never mind my head. Now, listen, I found the cab driver who drove Nicky from the station.
Just a minute, son.
Dad, what's the matter?
Just 30 seconds ago, look what I found in the suit you were wearing this morning.
Huh? Oh, that?
It's a $1,000 bill. One of the missing bills from Buffalo's Hall. Where did you get it, Ellery?
Oh, don't act the inspector with me, Dad. I found it in the pocket of Nicky's fur coat, along with Buffalo's gun. I didn't even tell Nicky about it.
I thought you said Buffalo's pals searched you.
They did, but I palmed the bill. And after they got through frisking me, I simply put the bill in my pocket. Now, listen. It all adds up
to... I know what it adds up to, Ellery. Once we get Nicky back, I'll do what I can for her, but... Sure.
Where's that call?
Now, what were you going to tell me?
Oh, never mind. What's this, Dad?
The autopsy report on Buffalo.
Very interesting.
What's interesting about... The call.
I'll get it. Ellery Queen speaking.
Well?
How's Nicky?
Stop stalling. She's okay. So far. Did you find out where the dough is?
Yes?
Where is it?
I'll tell you when I see you, Frank. You and Jupe and Rita.
Oh. Will you have a doll with you?
No, but I'll tell you where you can find it. Where do I meet you?
Nothing doing. I don't like it.
Suit yourself, Frank. Goodbye.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't you care about the day?
If you won't let me see her, obviously it's too late.
Okay.
Tell me where to drive.
Pick me up at... First Avenue and 96.
Here he is, Jupe. Inside. Having an okay, Frank?
Sure, Jupe. No cops hiding in his car. Nobody tailed us. I'll guarantee it.
Where's Nicky?
Not so fast.
Rita, I didn't see you there. Where's Nicky Porter?
Where's the dough?
No, Nicky. No talk.
In here.
Nicky.
Ellery. Hi.
Hi yourself. You all right?
They've handled me like a piece of china all day. Oh, Ellery, I'm so glad.
Hold it. So here she is, Queen, still in one chunk. Now, where did she hide the dough?
She didn't.
What? Huh?
Ellery. Ellery, what are you talking about?
I was able to trace your movements, Nicky. You carried your suitcase right from the train to a station cab. You spoke to no one. No one came near you. You gave the cab driver your home address. He drove you right there. You got out, and your landlady saw you come in and go to your room. You didn't drop anything. You didn't leave anything in the cab. The bulk of that stolen money wasn't found in your room because you never brought it there. You never took it from the train, Nicky.
Then someone else did?
Someone else did.
Malarkey. Next thing we know, you'll be telling us she didn't bump off Ernie Buffle.
She didn't.
She didn't? I didn't, Ellery?
No, Nicky. I just saw the autopsy report.
I didn't kill him?
At the time of the shots, you were on the floor, and Buffle was coming at you, leaning over you. The autopsy report shows that all six bullets struck Buffle's head at the top and at the back. Only someone higher than Buffle could have fired those shots.
Someone else that sneaked into the compartment?
Yes, Rita. Now, it's perfectly clear, isn't it? You were all in on that Chicago robbery with Buffle. You all came in on the same train, Buffle carrying the money. At the last moment, Buffle decided to double-cross the rest of you. He got into Nicky's compartment and tried to get her to carry the money off the train for him so he could recover her suitcase later and have the whole haul for himself.
Ernie, double-crossed us?
Yes, Rita. What's more, one of you was afraid of just that and followed Buffle and stood outside Nicky's compartment and heard the whole thing. That one entered the compartment, shot Buffle with his own gun, framed Nicky for the murder, and walked off the train carrying the money, saying nothing to the other two of you. Not only was Buffle a double-crosser, one of you three is a double-crosser, too.
Where's that 254 grand, Rita?
I didn't take it, Jupe. Oh, I wouldn't have killed Ernie. Not Ernie.
Frank, don't put the finger on me, Jupe. You got nothing on me. Maybe you did it yourself.
Yeah, it's one of you two. I didn't sweat on that bank job to get cheated out of mine.
Neither did I.
Hold it. I'll put the finger on the one who killed Buffle today and hid that money if the other two of you promise to let Nicky Porter and me walk out of here unharmed when I've done so.
Sure.
Okay.
I promise.
No, that's too easy. Suppose you all put your guns on the table first as a guarantee of good faith. Then I've got as good a chance as any of you to grab just in case you, forget your promise.
Here's mine. Jupe?
Okay. Come on, Frank.
I got a clear conscience.
One of us is a cockeyed liar. Okay, Queen, talk. Who killed Ernie?
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Nicky, would you introduce our guest armchair detective?
No, sir. Nicky's still a little shaky, so I'm going to help out while Nicky rests.
Dad, is that the real reason you want to be in on this interview?
Why, of course, Ellery. Well, anyway, it's a very great pleasure to introduce our guest for tonight, that world-famous personality currently appearing at the Palladium Theater in Sydney, Miss Gypsy Rose Lee.
Well, welcome to the show, Miss Lee.
Well, thank you, Ellery, and thank you, Inspector. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, Ellery, you're much more fortunate than I am. You have your wonderful father to help you solve your solution.
Yes, Miss Lee, I am. I'm very fortunate. However, before we proceed with your solution to the mystery, we'd all like to meet you personally.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you've certainly been a smash hit at the Sydney Palladium. Are you visiting any other Australian cities, Miss Lee?
Oh, I wish I were, but I'm going to have to get on back home, I'm afraid. Although we'd like to play Adelaide and Melbourne and particularly Perth.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to see Perth. People have told me it's so beautiful.
Well, then, we'd...
Miss Lee, how do you like the audiences here?
Oh, I think they're just simply wonderful. I think you're pretty cute, too. You know that?
Well, that's really quite...
Miss Lee, of course, you're a well-known mystery writer yourself, too, aren't you? I mean, I've read your mysteries, Mother Finds the Body and the Striptease Murder. Oh, they're wonderful.
Well, thank you, honey. Actually, you know, at home, the Striptease Murders wasn't called that at all. It was called the G-String Murders. But they figured that in Australia, they wouldn't know what a G-string is, so they'd probably think it was something to do with a violin. So they changed it to striptease murders.
I see. Well, you're quite a...
Yes, I think that's marvelous, Miss Lee. And do you have any particular hobbies outside the theater and writing?
Well, yes, I have. What is your favorite hobby?
Well,
I could sort of match it, maybe, and we could compare hobbies.
Indoors or outdoors?
Well, wherever you like. I like to collect stamps.
Yes, yes, yes. Philately is one of my hobbies. In fact, I'm thinking of taking it up full-time, aren't I, Ellery? Wasn't I talking to you just the other day?
Dad. Yeah, sure. Thank you very much, Miss Lee, but I think it's about time we got to our problem.
I'll do it, Ellery. I'll do it. Okay, now, Miss Lee, who killed Buffle and hid the money?
Oh, dear. I'm not really sure, you know. But I have a very sneaking hunch that Rita might have done it. Just on general principles, that is. I don't have any evidence against her, not even circumstantial evidence. But I don't like her personally.
I see.
And, of course, I do think that whoever got rid of Buffle was doing an awfully good deed anyway.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Miss Lee. And in just a moment, we'll learn if your solution is the correct one.
I'm on your side, Miss Lee. If there's anything I can do, you can be sure that I...
Rita, how much money was in that haul?
$258,000.
$258,000. But Buffle's killer left some of that money to frame Nicky Porter. So he didn't get away with the whole amount. Duke, how much did the killer actually get away with?
I just said a minute ago. $254,000.
$254,000. Frank, is that right?
Huh? No. It ought to be $255,000. The papers today said $3 1,000-buck bills were left on the floor of a train.
The papers were wrong, Frank. Because the papers didn't know that the killer left an additional $1,000 bill in Nicky Porter's coat pocket where I found it. So that does make four, and four from 258 is 254, as Duke correctly stated.
Hey, Frank?
He sees Duke, but apparently you don't. Because only three people in the universe know that the exact amount in the killer's possession is $254,000, Duke. I'm one of them. My father, Inspector Queen, is number two, and he didn't know till 30 seconds before Frank's phone call to me tonight. And Buffle's killer is the third. And how did you know, Duke?
Well, Miss Damey asked Nicky. She spelled it today.
Impossible, Duke. Nicky herself didn't know. I never told her. No, Duke, there's only one way you could have known. And that's if you planted that bill in Nicky's pocket.
Don't move.
Dirty double-crosser had another gun.
Get to the other side of the room, all of you. I'm going to take these rods, I'm going to get that door, and I'm going to scram out of here. First one that comes after me gets...
Don't move, Duke. Go on, get him, man.
Oh, come right in, Dad. Well, you hear what he said, Ellery? He's going to get the door and scram out of here. That means he's hidden it in this house. Ben, search the house.
Okay, come on, Duke.
Take these two cuties in, too.
Come on.
Nicky, I can't tell you how I feel thinking all day today that you... Nicky, will you forgive me?
Why, Ellery, it's the inspector. When did he get here?
Huh? Good grief, Dad, it's another attack of amnesia.
Oh, nonsense, son. She's just out on her feet. Come on, honey. We'll take you home. Grab her under the other arm, Ellery.
Easy does it. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. Thanks again, Gypsy Rose Lee, and thanks to the directors of the Palladium Theatre, Sydney, who made it possible for you to come along and be our guest armchair detective this evening. Nicky?
Never mind, Nicky, you rest here. Yes, Miss Lee, I'd also like you to accept this subscription to the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine, which I'll send to wherever you may be.
Oh, thank you, Inspector. Well, good night, Ellery. Good night, listeners. Come on, sweetie. Let's us go play with our stamps, shall we?
Well, thank you, Gypsy Rose Lee. And now, all you home armchair detectives...
Oh, Miss Lee.
Dad. Okay. Good night, everyone, until next week.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen is a Grace Gibson radio production directed by John Saul.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob. I thought I would step in here and kind of apologize for the episode here. It really is not the best quality episode that I've been presenting normally. I did a lot of cleaning up on this episode. There was a lot of background noise and surface noise from the record that it was recorded from. Apparently, though, this show was recorded off the radio, and apparently the radio needed to be tuned up before it should have been used. Because the volume fluctuation was going up and down and up and down, and it was really distracting. It was loud enough to hear, and then you couldn't hardly hear it at all. I made some adjustments to that, and when I could, I boosted the volume, and when I couldn't, I left it alone. But basically, you know, it is what it is in the business, as they say. So please enjoy this episode of Mr. and Mrs. North. And after this is Let George Do It. I hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you.
Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Faust and Joseph Gish. To most New Yorkers, ice is a frozen liquid usually found in the form of cubes. However, there are still some people who enjoy skating on it. And when Pam and Jerry are in the mood for some winter exercise, they drop in at a neighborhood ice palace and indulge in this magnificent outdoor sport indoors.
Look out now, Jerry. Give me some room.
Darling, are you still trying to make a figure eight?
Oh, no, dear. I'm not up to eight yet. I've just reached four.
No wonder you keep falling down. A four is impossible.
Well, I don't see why it should be. You just make a straight line like this, and then you cross the other foot over, and... Maybe I should have made two twos instead. Oh, well. Everybody takes a fall once in a while.
Not that girl over there. She really knows how to figure skate.
Well, I wish you'd stop looking at her figure.
Huh?
Besides, she's a professional.
You mean she gives lessons?
Now, Jerry, if you're thinking of taking lessons from that...
Well, I really ought to brush up on my skating, Pam. I'm getting off. Hey, watch it. She's coming this way.
Well, I wish she wouldn't try those stunts around us. The first thing you know...
Look out!
See? She fell down.
Well, that was a bad spill, Pam. She's all shaken up.
Jerry, where are you going?
Don't get excited, dear. I just want to see if she's all right. Can I help you, miss?
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure I can get up. Oh,
what happened? Are you hurt?
All right, there we are.
No, I don't think so. It's just my ankle. It's going to go out from under me.
It wasn't your ankle, miss. It was your skate. Look, you've broken the blade.
Well, it's a good thing I wasn't trying to jump, or I might have had a nasty... That's funny.
What?
The blade of my skate is... It doesn't seem to be broken. It looks as if it's been filed.
Say, you're right. It has been filed.
Why do you suppose anybody would do a thing like that? Unless somebody wanted you to have an accident.
Somebody did.
What do you mean?
This isn't the first time something like this has happened. I've had these so-called accidents ever since I came to work here.
Accidents?
Yes. Almost every night something new happens. First it was the short circuit in my dressing room. And then the little board on the back stairs. And a gas stove that was left on the equipment room without any flame. And Saturday... A chandelier fell.
Well, you ought to complain to the management.
What good would that do? The manager's the one who's responsible for all this.
Well, if I were you, I'd go to the police and have the manager arrested.
Oh, no. I couldn't do that.
Why not?
Because the manager is my father. Really, Mrs. North, I don't know how you're going to speak to my father in front of me.
It's going to be awfully embarrassing. Well, you don't have to go in with us, Miss Russo. We'll go in his office alone.
Oh, all right. I'll wait for you in my dressing room.
Good.
We'll be there in a few minutes. Mr. Russo.
Yes? Who is
there,
please?
Mr. and Mrs. North. May we come in?
All right. Come in.
Thank you.
Now, what it is? Marcella sent you in?
Who?
Marcella. My stepdaughter.
Oh, she's your stepdaughter.
So what difference does that make? Daughter's stepdaughter is my step, not yours. to what you want of me.
Well, for Pete's sake, what are you so jumpy about, Mr. Rousseau?
If you have daughter like Marcella, you be jumpy too. That girl have changed completely. Overnight.
In what way?
In every way. Since she come here to work for me, she like Mr. Hyde and Dr. Jackal. Every night she tried to kill me.
Huh?
First with loose board downstairs, then with chandelier. She tried to asphyxiate me.
With a stove?
Oh, she tell you about that.
She told us you were trying to kill her, Mr. Rousseau.
Oh, I can kill her. Marcella killed me first.
Just a minute, Mr. Rousseau. Maybe somebody's trying to kill both of you.
What for the reason is? They have never done somebody wrong.
Just the same, it's a distinct...
What's the matter, Jerry?
Somebody's listening at the door. I'm going to see who it is. As I said, Mr. Rousseau, there's a distinct possibility that someone's out to kill you both, and that someone may...
Oh.
Well, Marcella, come right in. You can hear much better inside.
Oh, I wasn't really listening, Mr. North. I just wondered if you were still talking.
Well, come in anyway. Mrs. North and I were just leaving.
Leaving? Where are we going?
We're going down the hall to a public phone, dear. I'd like to speak to Bill Wigand about this.
Wigand? Who is?
Oh, just a friend of ours, Mr. Rousseau. We'll be back in a little while. Come on, Jerry.
After you, darling.
Hey, down, no! Oh, golly, what was that?
The light aimed straight at your head. I saw the blade flash just before it hit this door.
Oh, my goodness. It just missed me by an inch.
Are you all right, Mrs. North?
Well, I guess so. Only this gives the case an entirely different complexion.
How do you mean?
Well, the murderer isn't trying to kill you or your daughter, Mr. Rousseau. He's trying to kill me.
Yes, Bill, I'm calling from a public phone booth at the rink. And you better not waste any time getting down here. Pam was almost killed. Wait a second, Bill. Pam's rapping on the window. What is it, dear?
Quick, Jerry. Tell Bill to come right over and hang up.
What?
Somebody just sneaked into Marcella's dressing room. We've got to see who it is.
Well, Bill, I'll see you when you get here. I've got to run now. So long.
Hurry, darling. It might be the man who threw that knife at me.
And I certainly don't want to hurry. Which way is Marcella's dressing room?
Down here. There's door on the right.
Oh, it's open. Take it easy, man.
I don't see anything.
There's a man in there, all right. Seems to be searching for something.
Well, don't let him find it. He may be setting up another one of those acts.
Don't worry. He won't get the chance. Looking for something, mister?
Oh, who are you?
We are Mr. and Mrs. North. Who are you?
I'm just a friend of Miss Russo's.
Oh, is that why you were searching through a thing?
If you don't mind, I'd rather not answer any questions at this time. I've found what I'm looking for, and I'm leaving. I'll stand aside.
I will when I...
Stand aside, I said!
Maybe you better, Jerry. He's got a gun.
And I knew how to use one before either of you were born. Now sit down here and stay in this room until I'm well out of sight. Go on, sit down.
Okay, okay.
And stay down. Because if you try to follow me, I'll drop you like a sack of meal.
Quite a talker, that bird.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't try anything foolish, dear. He meant every word he said.
What if he did? We can't just sit here and let him get away with murder. I'm going after him.
Jerry, stay where you are.
Don't go to pieces, darling. I'm just going to open the door.
Did you get your head shot off?
Not if you keep your voice down. Just want to see if he's gone.
Is he?
No. He's right out here in the hall.
In the hall?
Yes. He's lying on the floor with a knife in his chest.
Don't touch him, Jerry. Don't even go near him.
I'm not touching anything, dear. I just want to see what he's got in his hand.
What is it?
Some sort of a locket with a string on it. The string seems to be broken.
Careful, somebody's coming down the hall.
Quick, get back in the dressing room so we won't be seen.
Don't push him.
Shh, we must be heard here. Sounds like a man.
What's wrong?
Stop to look at the body.
Good heavens. It can't be.
It can't be what?
Who said that? Where are you?
Right over here. Is this man a friend of yours?
Why, no. I mean, he's not a friend exactly, but I do know him. At least I did. He is dead, isn't he?
Yes, I'm afraid he is.
Oh, how awful. I won't be able to eat for a week.
Oh, let's not talk about eating at a time like this.
You're so right. I never should have mentioned it in the presence of the dead, but my stomach is such a mess, I can't stop thinking about it. I'd be a happy man if I didn't have a stomach.
Well, if you don't mind, let's change the subject.
Oh, of course, of course. My name is Chadwick. Arthur Chadwick. I'm a theatrical agent.
And this gentleman on the floor, do you know his name?
Oh, indeed. I didn't realize you hadn't been introduced. May I present Mr. Gallagher, Mr. Roy Gallagher.
You say that as if we ought to know him.
Well, you should. He was a very wealthy man, had scads and scads of money, one or two gold mines, I believe, in Alaska.
You weren't meeting him here by any chance?
Oh, no. I was as surprised to see him here as I was to see him dead.
Then what are you doing here?
Why, I came to see Miss Rousseau about an engagement in an ice show. I believe I have a job for her out of town.
And you haven't any idea who killed Mr. Gallagher?
Oh, heavens, no. You don't think I did it, do you? Well, the sight of blood makes me curdle. Oh, dear, I'm going to have to do something about my stomach. It's beginning to twitter again.
Well, I don't think you... Jerry, what was that?
That was a scream, and if I'm not mistaken, it came from down there, Mr. Russo's office.
Oh, no, I couldn't bear another murder tonight. Not now.
You won't have to bear it. Just wait till we get back, Mr. Chadwick. Come on, man.
Do you think it's safe to leave him there with Mr. Gallagher's body, Jerry?
If I'm not, we've got to find out what happened.
We'll find out. Here, go ahead, open the door.
Give me a chance, will you? Marcella, what's wrong?
Oh, Mr. Martin, I'm so glad you're here. Something's happened to my father. Oh, golly. Is he dead? No. Somebody struck him on the head. He's unconscious.
Yeah, that's a mean bruise.
Oh, the lights. The lights.
What's this come to?
Another light. They keep going on and off in my head.
Easy now, Mr. Russo. Who hit you?
The floor. I was sitting back in chair. And you know what? I am fine. No back. She fell right through.
And your head hit the floor.
How could it miss? The floor is all over the ground.
Oh, looks like another one of those accidents. This chair has been tampered with.
Oh, I wish we knew who was doing all this. If we don't find out pretty soon, one of us is going to be killed. One of us has been killed already.
What do you say?
In the hall, Mr. Russo. There's a man lying on the floor with a knife in his chest. And the murderer is still on the loose.
What murderer?
Oh, Ben, you frightened me.
Oh, sorry, Pam. I didn't realize a murder had been committed between now and the time you called. Where's the body? Down the hall, Bill. He was killed right in front of Marcella's dressing room. Oh, what's his name?
Gallagher. Roy Gallagher.
The millionaire gold miner?
That's right. You know him? No, but it seems to me I've read something about his daughter.
Here, Bill. The body's right over here. Only...
Only what? The man who told us who he was is gone.
That isn't all that's gone, Jerry.
What do you mean?
The locket that was in Mr. Gallagher's hand. That's gone, too.
Easy now, Miss Gallagher. I know it's an ordeal for a girl to identify her father's body, but since your mother isn't alive, I had to call you.
Well, what more do you want of me? How much longer do I have to stay in the office, Lieutenant Wagon?
Well, she's right, Bill. The poor kid's in no condition to answer any questions now.
We've got to find some clues, Jerry, and Miss Gallagher's the only one who can help us.
I'll help in any way I can, Mrs. North. But I told you everything I know. I've even brought you my father's scrapbook. But I'm sure he didn't have an enemy in the world.
Oh, but your father must have had some enemies, Miss Gallagher. His scrapbook is just filled with pictures of people he knew.
Well, most of those pictures were taken when he was a young man. Up in Alaska, they're just sourdoughs and grubstakers for a trapper.
And you don't know any of them?
No, I've never been in Alaska. My mother and I lived here until she died. And for a good many years, I thought my father was dead, too. Until he struck it rich and came back to New York.
When was that?
It was about 4 years ago. When I was trying to get a job on the stage.
Oh, yes. There's a clipping about it in the scrapbook. Actress reunited with millionaire father after 20 years separation. See?
Don't read that now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
It's all right. It's just that I can't help thinking about losing him when it was only a few years ago that I found him.
Miss Gallagher, I don't think there's any need to keep you here any longer tonight. Suppose you come with me and I'll put you in a cab.
All right. I guess I haven't been much use to you, Lieutenant.
On the contrary, Miss Gallagher, you've been a great help. Poor girl, I can just imagine how she feels.
I know. The way she was dragged down here and then having to identify... Jerry, look.
What's it, dear?
This picture in the scrapbook. Doesn't that man's face look familiar to you?
Huh?
Without the beard, I mean.
Oh.
This man with his arm on Mr. Gallagher's shoulder. Cover up his beard, and what have you got?
practically nothing. That beard's all over his face.
Oh, for goodness sake, Jerry. Don't you know who this is? Mr. Russo.
Marcella's father?
Yes. He must have been in Alaska with Mr. Gallagher. Don't you see? He's dressed like a fur trapper.
Oh, what are you getting so excited about?
Because this puts a new light on the case. If Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Russo knew each other, Mr. Russo might have had a reason for killing him.
What sort of reason?
Come on, Jerry. That's what we'll have to find out.
Are you sure this is Mr. Russo's apartment, then?
Well, the elevator man said 5B, and the name's right here on the door. Oh, hello, Marcella. Is your father home? Yes. What's wrong?
Who said anything was wrong? We'd just like to speak to him, that's all.
Well, you can't come in now. My father's asleep.
Who is he?
Oh, he's asleep, is he?
Well, I thought he was. He wasn't feeling well when we came home, so I put him right to bed. With his clothes on. What? Well, I can see him standing right there in the living room, and he's fully dressed. Why are you lying to us, Marcella? What's happened?
Nothing. I just wish you hadn't come here.
Why not?
Why, sir? You not tell me who he's?
Oh, good evening, Mr. Russo.
Hey, Mr. North. You fit pretty late time to call on somebody, no?
We had a late idea, Mr. Russo. Maybe come in?
No good to come in, huh? Marcel and me have to go out?
At this time of night? Where are you going?
Marcel have new job in Ice Shot West, and we make plan to go there.
Well, before you go, you'd better tell us how well you knew Mr. Gallagher.
What you talk about? I never hear of him.
Then what's your picture doing in his scrapbook?
What picture?
The one of you in a beard. It was taken in Alaska.
Now I know you crazy. I never have beard, and I never be in Alaska.
Now look, Mr. Russo, if you'd rather we call the police and have them ask you these questions.
No, please. Do not call the police. Just go away from here and leave us alone. We'd be killed if you don't.
Killed?
Not so loud. Please. He may be watching us. He may hear us.
Who?
Mr. Chadwick, the theatrical agent.
Yes. He just left here a few minutes ago, and he threatened to kill us if we talked to anyone about the murder.
He'd give us 2 hours to get out of town. Maybe get Marcel a job in California to make sure we leave tonight.
Well, you better not leave. Chadwick's probably trying to frame you.
No, please. Go away. Let us get ready. We're supposed to meet him in his office in 20 minutes.
20 minutes, huh? Quick, get on the telephone and call Lieutenant Wygant. Tell him to come right up here.
Wait a minute. Where are you be going?
We're going to keep your appointment with Mr. Chadwick.
I don't understand it, Jerry.
Hmm?
The door was open and all the lights are on, but nobody's in the office.
Well, maybe Mr. Chadwick stepped out for a minute.
Either that or he's setting a trap for us.
How could he know we're here? He's expecting the Russos.
Well, I don't like it, no matter which way it is.
Don't be silly, dear. This is a good chance for us to have a look around.
Jerry, what are you doing?
Looking around. Go through those files, Pam. If Miss Gallagher was an actress, he may have some sort of record of...
What is it? Did you find something?
I'll say I found something. The locket that was stolen from Mr. Gallagher's hand.
But Chadwick is the one who took it. I wonder why.
We'll find the answer to that one.
When what, Mr. North?
Oh, Jerry, here's Mr. Chadwick.
Mr. Chadwick in a loaded gun, Mrs. North. What are you two doing here?
Why, we were waiting for you, Mr. Chadwick.
Yes. We knew you were a theatrical agent, and we came to see you about a job. We do an act in vaudeville.
Oh, really? And what is the nature of your act?
The nature? We're acrobats.
Is that so? Well, suppose you do a few back somersaults for me.
Here? In this little tiny office?
Oh, why not? Move the desk back. There's plenty of room.
Oh, but we don't do that sort of thing.
No? Well, what sort of acrobatics do you do?
Well, we have a high wire act. I balance a chair on one leg, and she sits on my head and spins plates.
I'm just a cheesecake, Mr. Chadwick.
And you expect me to believe all this, of course.
Of course.
And what are you two doing with that locket in your hand? Why did you open my drawer and fish it out, eh?
Well, I...
Don't bother to explain, Mr. North. I have an act, too, you know. A sharpshooting act. And it goes like this.
Hey, what are you doing?
Giving this office the proper look. You see, I'm afraid you know too much. I've got to make it look like you were ransacking this place when I shot you.
Shot? Did you say shot?
I did, Mrs. North. The law allows a man to protect his property against marauders. And in the darkness, I couldn't see who you were.
Well, What darkness?
Don't worry about it, Mrs. North. When I turn off the lights, you'll both be dead.
Mr. Chadwick, you wouldn't dare go through with it.
Wouldn't I? I have a great deal at stake, Mrs. North.
But you don't seem to understand.
Be quiet. There's no need to prolong this agony. The sooner we...
Arthur! What are you doing?
Oh, you fool, you. Why did you come here?
Miss Gallagher.
So you're the connection we've been looking for.
I told you to be quiet. Now keep your mouth shut.
For heaven's sakes, Arthur, put that gun down. Don't you know these people are working with the police?
I know very well what they're doing. They found the locket that I stole from your father's hand. Your locket, Faye.
What?
You were in such a hurry to get away, you forgot the one piece of evidence that would send you to the chair. The locket that your father pulled off your neck when you stabbed him.
Oh, no. I didn't stab him, Arthur, and I wasn't wearing a locket.
You weren't wearing it?
No.
Well, then, you didn't kill him. And I thought...
Oh, never mind what you thought. You've got to let these people go.
That's quite right, Miss Gallagher.
Bill!
Drop that gun, Mr. Chadwick, and drop it fast.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Russo, you can come in with your daughter now. There won't be any fireworks.
For which I am much obliged. If there is one thing I hate about fire, it is the worst.
Father, please let someone else do the talking.
No, Marcella, your father's the one who has to talk. He holds the key to all this.
What key? I am just simple fur trapper with big heart and little brain. I don't want anything from anybody.
Well, then why did you deny that you knew Mr. Gallagher? Well, why did you deny being the bearded man in that picture we found in his scrapbook?
Because I am simple fur trapper. And Mr. Chadwick told me to keep my trap shut.
Go on.
Well, I know Gallagher for a long time. We were good friends. But when I come back from Alaska, I think him die. That is why I am adoptee's daughter.
Mr. Gallagher's daughter? Marcella is Mr. Gallagher's daughter?
That is right.
Then who are you, Miss Gallagher?
She's a very bad actress named Faye Revere.
Arthur, no.
Well, you are, my dear. I never would have cast you for the part if you weren't the right age and general description.
General description of what?
The daughter Mr. Gallagher was looking for. He advertised for her in the papers, and I sent Faye to answer the advertisement.
Must you tell them everything?
Well, what difference does it make, dear? The cat's out of the bag. We can't collect the inheritance now.
Oh, I see. You and Miss Revere had a deal to split Mr. Gallagher's fortune.
And when you found out that Marcella and her father were in town, you tried to kill them both with those phony accidents.
That was Arthur's idea. He thought Mr. Gallagher was on Marcella's trail.
And he was. He went to a dressing room tonight.
So you killed him?
Oh, don't be absurd. I haven't the stomach to stab a man. Besides, it's obvious now who did stab him.
Who?
The man or woman who had the most to gain by Mr. Gallagher's death. Marcella or Mr. Russo.
You lying snake. I never kill my friend. I don't even know he is alive.
And you, Marcella, is this your locket?
Yes, but I wasn't wearing it. Mr. Gallagher must have taken it from my dressing room.
Then why was the string broken?
If Mr. Gallagher didn't rip it from your throat, the string would have been whole.
Oh, but the string was whole, Faye.
It was?
When Mr. Gallagher took it from Marcella's dressing room, it was whole. You're the one who broke the string.
Are you crazy?
No. You must have broken it, or you couldn't have known that it was broken. You see, the locket has no string on it now, and the only time you could have seen it was when you killed him and broke the string to put the blame on Marcella.
You can't prove that.
Oh, I don't have to. Marcella's neck proves it.
Why, of course, if that string had been ripped from her neck, it would have left a mark, and there isn't any mark.
Exactly. You killed Mr. Gallagher because you were afraid he'd discover his real daughter and ruin your chance to inherit his millions. With Mr. Gallagher out of the way, you had nothing to fear.
Nothing but the law, Pam. Come on, Faye, it's getting late.
I did it, Jerry. I did it.
What, dear?
A figure eight. Now that Marcella's been giving me lessons, I can practically count up to 100.
Oh, good for you, Dolly.
Now watch this, dear. I'm going to try a pirouette.
Ah, careful, Pam. That's not so easy.
Oh, I can do it.
Say, you've come a long way since that first night we were here.
Well, I've been practicing, darling. But I won't be happy until I've mastered a jump turn.
How'd that go?
Like this. Woo!
Pam, you did it!
Isn't it wonderful, Jerry? Now I'm going to put on my skates and try it on the ice.
Mr. and Mrs. North has come to you through the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education. Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice, danger is my stock and trade. If it's so far over your head you can't even reach it with a sky hook, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Dear Valentine, here's a laugh. A private dick falling for that screwy ad of yours. Her name is Joe Logan. We ran across each other a couple of times, but that's not important. Here's the deal. I'm meeting somebody at the Half Moon Motel tonight. I'm not the sensitive type, but something about this rings phony. So if you read about me in the obituary column tomorrow, I want you to cry murder, good and loud. Enclosed is $100.
$100 for your trouble. But if you hear my sweet gravel voice over the phone before noon tomorrow, forget the whole thing and buy yourself a drink. Signed, Joe Logan.
I'm not buying that, Angel. It's too pat. Joe Logan knocked off by a hit-and-run driver last night of all nights.
Yeah, but don't forget it says here that Mr. Logan had his customary snoopful when he was clipped by that car on a deserted stretch of Whitman Highway.
And not too far away from the Half Moon Motel. Better put your ear stoppers in, Brooksy.
Huh?
Yeah. I'm going to cry bloody murder the way my client wanted it. Good and loud.
Look, Valentine, I don't want to be antisocial, but the only thing I've got eyes for this morning is a report just sent in. Frank Potter, prominent banker and philanthropist, was murdered.
How about one Joseph Logan? I think he was murdered, too.
You think, but this I know. Frank Potter was murdered, and he happened to be a close friend of the police commissioner.
Oh.
Yes, sir, and the commissioner doesn't like his friends being bumped off unless I can produce the miscreant 5 minutes later. So call me tomorrow.
Oh, that's a fine attitude, Lieutenant. The only safe way to get murdered in this town is to be a friend of the commissioner's.
Oh, now look, Miss Brooks, why don't we talk this over on my day off when I can afford to be a gentleman?
Oh.
Right now, I want... now... Yes, Riley. Ah. Okay, I'm on my way out there now. What's that? What's the name of that place? Go on, go on. I'm listening. And your sis, Mrs. Cronin, identified the man she saw with Potter? Okay, Sergeant. Okay, I'm as good as there right now.
Well, Brooksy, I guess they're too busy for us today.
Yeah.
We'll be back, Lieutenant, when this storm is over.
No, you don't, Valentine. You're not leaving here.
Well, what's the matter with you anyway?
Do you know where Frank Potter was murdered?
Look, I'm not my usual psychic self this morning. Where?
The Half Moon Motel.
George!
Go on, Lieutenant.
Yes, the Half Moon Motel. And a dame out there, a Mrs. Cronin, identified your client, Joe Logan, as the man who did the killing.
I'm surprised, Mr. Valentine. The police didn't get around to me yet.
Any time now, Maggie. They know that in a racket like Logan's, the secretary knows more about a boss than anybody else in the world.
Maggie, don't you have any idea what Mr. Logan might have been afraid of last night?
I just know that Joe's death was no accident. I didn't even know he wrote that note.
Not that it matters to Logan now, but that letter to me puts him right there in the Half Moon Motel with Potter.
Well, why does it? Joe had other clients. Whenever he didn't want to meet somebody here at the office, he'd call up the Half Moon Motel. I know the police would love to pin this on Joe, but I'm not going to let them out.
Oh, cut it, Maggie. Let me have that.
What?
Yeah, that page from the appointment pad. You're too nervous for any sleight of hand today. 8 o'clock. Frank Potter. Half Moon.
Oh, so you knew he was going to meet Mr. Potter, didn't you?
All right, I did. But Joe didn't kill anybody.
All right, maybe I believe it. But that's not good enough, Maggie. You got to make sure. Now, what about the deal your boss had with Potter?
I don't know anything about it.
Oh, you don't, huh? Okay, come on, Brooksy. We're wasting our time.
Wait.
You want to play this hand face up with me?
It's the truth. I don't know what Potter wanted with Joe.
Or perhaps what Joe wanted with Potter.
Whichever way it was, but they did have a quarrel right here in the office yesterday morning.
That just makes the case stronger against Logan.
I couldn't hear what they were fighting about. Finally, Potter slammed out of here in a rage.
Say, just one more point, and let's face it. The medical examiner reported that Joe was a little more than slightly crocked when that car sideswiped him.
Joe never drank so much he didn't know what he was doing.
Just the same, how about a list of his favorite bars? It might help if I knew where he was before he went to meet Potter.
Joe's favorite bars? How do you want them, from A to Z?
Oh, George, can't you see she's all upset?
Could have been Johnny's place near City Hall, or Chris's on West Laredo Street, or it could have been the...
Mort's Paddock Bar on Whitman Highway?
What's that, Brooksy?
Look at this book of matches in the ashtray. Mort's Paddock Bar, where good sports meet.
Yes, that's another place Joe used to like to sit and talk to Mort.
Whitman Highway, that's on the way to that motel.
And Mr. Logan's...
Later, Maggie.
Mr. Valentine, should I be forthright?
Oh, by all means, Mort.
If it was anybody else, Mr. Logan, I would have said he was well under the influence when he left my place last night.
But seeing it was Mr. Logan, what would you say?
Well, you see, he's one of those good-looking, strapping men who, well, you know, just get convivial, so to speak.
Well, that's a nice way of putting it, Mort.
You know something, miss? Mr. Logan's going to leave an empty place at my bar. You know, he was a swell talker. I picked up a lot of new words from him. Yes, I guess you'd say Mr. Logan was epigrammatic when it came to repartee. The poor fella.
Yeah, I see what you're trying to say. But tell me, Mort, what time did he leave here last night?
Oh, about 8, I'd say.
Before or after 8?
Well, couldn't be sure, but he did say he was leaving his car in my parking lot till he got back.
Well, didn't he say where he was going?
No, miss, but it must have been near here because he said he was going to walk it. Ironical, isn't it? Just this time when he decides not to use his car, he meets up with a pedestrian's fate.
Not just ironical, it's more than that.
Yeah, now you see right out that window? Down the highway a couple of hundred feet? That's where it all happened, on the right-hand side there. Just by that first telephone pole. Ah, oh, poor fella.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mort. You've been a great help.
I'm afraid I didn't have very much to say.
But you did, believe me.
Well, Dolphin again, always like to talk to people.
Well, darling, do I ask questions or are you going to let me in on the brainstorm?
Take another look down the highway, Brooksy. What do you see?
A pretty highway. Credit to the state. One lane going east, the other going west. An island of trees in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yourself, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Joe Logan left the Paddock Bar and started to walk down the highway on the right-hand side, walking toward the Half Moon Motel, not away from it.
Well, if you're right, George, Logan never even got there to kill Potter.
Which should simplify things for us, but doesn't. I've got a hunch whoever killed Potter ran Logan down.
Yeah. Well, what next?
Well, I understand there's a Mrs. Potter. Have a talk with her, Brooksy, huh? See if she knows what business her husband had with Logan.
Okay, where'll I meet you?
Back at the office. In the meantime, I'm going to scrape up an acquaintance with this Mrs. Cronin, who swears she saw Logan at the Half Moon Motel.
Look, Bob, since you ain't a dick, beat it. I got business with Mrs. Cronin.
So have I, Goon Boy.
I said beat it.
Now, boys, remember, I do have neighbors.
You leave this to me, Sheila.
Are you getting out of this doorway, or do I have to step over you?
Look, you do as I told
you. So I step over you.
You know how to make an impressive entrance, don't you?
I don't think I'm forgetting this, mister.
If you do, I'll be glad to refresh your memory.
Oh, you shouldn't have done that to Charlie. After all, he's just a bookie trying to squeeze out a living.
Well, from all these racing forms around, you seem to be one of his best customers.
I owe him $3,000 just for yesterday. And Charlie's getting a little impatient. You don't have $3,000 on you, have you?
Just a few pennies shy. Now, Mrs. Cronin...
If you were to call me Sheila, what would I have to call you?
Well, that depends on your vocabulary. After I called you a liar.
I liked you the moment you came in. Can I get you a drink?
You didn't see Joe Logan here last night, did you?
Strange how it happened. I just looked out the window, and there he was in that cabin across the court.
How come you knew Logan at all? What did you ever have to do with him?
I needed a private detective once. Someone told me about Joe.
What kind of a deal was it?
Strictly confidential. Had nothing to do with this. The police let it go at that. Why don't you relax?
You're still lying, Sheila.
Whatever you say, George.
No one who could afford to lose $3,000 a day at jungle up at a cheap motel like this.
Oh, you're so understanding, dear. But why don't you forget it?
It'd be easier if I knew how come you were here so conveniently to identify Logan.
That was just an accident. I'm supposed to be with a girlfriend in Seattle. That's what my husband thinks.
Oh?
I gamble too much. Just like other people do other things too much. Once in a while, I take a room like this and splurge. Bet on anything. Bet all the time. The bigger the odds against me, the better. It's in my blood. It's like a disease.
Must be an expensive disease.
Oh, poor darling. I talk too much, don't I? I want you to make me forget that I never win. I bet you can do that. What odds do you want?
That's very nice, Sheila. But not good enough.
What better odds do you want, you?
Oh, thanks. Now that you've cleared the air, we can get back to business.
Oh, George, I'm so sorry. Did I hurt you?
What time did you tell Lieutenant Riley that you saw Logan?
8:00.
How come you're so sure?
Well, Charlie just phoned to give me the result of the last dog race in Miami. I haven't noticed the time. You're not still angry with me.
You want to bet?
You're not leaving.
Sorry, Sheila. I expect to be a very busy boy.
Oh, George.
First a phony accident, then a number. A murder. And now you.
Yes?
You going all out to make me stop wondering if you frame Logan. And somehow I think it all ties together. Now all I got to do is prove it.
We'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. Meanwhile, a word about a very important matter of motoring. If your car's battery has been acting like a mule, temperamental and balky, here's an easy way to cure it. Have your battery serviced at a standard station or independent Chevron gas station. They'll inspect the water level, cables, terminal clamps, and test the battery's condition. And they'll be frank. If it just needs a charge, they'll tell you. If your battery's really on its last legs, they'll explain how a new Atlas battery can save you money. Every Atlas battery has its certified power capacity stamped on the case where you can read it. And you'll find these capacities meet or exceed standards set by the Society of Automotive Engineers. The longer-lasting starting power of Atlas batteries, by the way, is backed by a written warranty honored everywhere by 38,000 Atlas dealers. Independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations are glad to service your battery, proud to offer you an Atlas battery when you need one. That's why they say, and mean, we'll take better care of your car. And now back to tonight's adventure, George Valentine. A private detective, of all people, mails you $100 and tells you to cry murder if he's among the missing tomorrow morning. Sure enough, the gentleman, one Joe Logan, is run down by a car during the night. Then a prominent banker is found dead in a cheap motel. And an incredible blonde who prides herself on betting on anything puts the finger on your dead client as the murderer. All of which makes you decide to ask Joe Logan's secretary a few more important questions.
Come on, Maggie, think. What truck did Logan have with Sheila Cronin?
It was just a routine case, Mr. Valentine. It was more than a year ago.
Nothing involving that hot tip addict could be routine. She's too far out of this world. Now, let's have the facts. Well?
I suppose he did go out with a couple of times. She kept after him.
Was it serious enough to feel she was the woman scorned? Make her want to frame Logan?
Joe could never be serious about any woman. There were too many of them.
All right, so he was a Casanova. What about the case?
The insurance company hired Joe to investigate Mrs. Cronin when some of her jewels were stolen. Everything proved to be on the up and up. Joe was only on the case a couple of days.
That doesn't give me much. That hot-eyed blonde is the key to this fancy frame-up. But why? That's what I got to find out.
You wanted to know about Mrs. Potter.
Yeah?
Joe never had her for a client. I even looked through all his personal papers.
Which also gets us nowhere. Unless Brooksy comes up with something on Mrs. Potter.
Miss Brooks, can't you see I'm dressing to go out?
Oh, I just thought, Mrs. Potter, that since your husband had some dealings with Joe Logan, you might know something about him.
I told you. I never heard of Joe Logan. Anyway, what right have you to question me like this?
I just thought you might be interested, if it might help solve Mr. Potter's murder.
I'm sure the police are doing all they can about it.
Well, you might make it easier for them if you tell them all you know about Logan.
What makes you so sure I know this?
Whoa.
This Joe Logan.
He was killed, you know.
Well, that's just too bad. But he's not the first man to be knocked down by a hit-and-run driver. Now get out.
Oh, then you did know Joe Logan.
What?
Well, that's pretty obvious. There were only a few lines in the paper about his hit-and-run accident. Not the sort of thing you'd remember about a stranger.
You know, Miss Brooks, I should have obeyed my first impulse and had the butler throw you out. All right. I hired Joe Logan once.
Why didn't you tell that to the police when they questioned you?
It has no bearing on this case. Does that satisfy you, Miss Brooks?
Oh, not quite, but a good beginning. Well, I won't keep you any longer. I know you're anxious to get out and celebrate.
What did you say? Get out of here. Go on, get out.
Good work, Angel. I don't know what it means, but Mrs. Potter must have a good reason for denying that she knew Logan.
Well, it's hard to know what she's thinking. Vivian's a cold dish with a memorized smile.
Our friend Logan seems to have gone in for females who insist on being characters.
Mm.
Anyway, why can't we find any record of this deal with Mrs. Potter?
Maybe it's something you just don't put down on paper, huh?
Could be, Brooksy. Well, all we know up till now is that Potter and Logan had a quarrel.
Yeah, that's
both
right.
Both Sheila and Vivian were Logan's clients at one time or another. Oh, make something out of that if you can.
Okay, Valentine. You said you want to see me?
Well, Charlie, you're a good sport. I didn't think you'd show.
The information you asked for over the phone, Valentine, I got it.
Well.
But how does it get me the $3,000 Sheila Cronin owes me?
Look, Charlie, I'm not guaranteeing anything. But you'll stand a better chance at collecting if you play along with me.
Well,
business is business, Charlie.
Okay. I don't know why it's so important, but it was 9 o'clock when I called Sheila about the last dog race in Miami.
Sure it wasn't 8?
Couldn't be. Races ain't over till almost 9.
Now we know Sheila was lying.
Yeah, but why? What answers have we got if she just says I made a mistake?
Yeah, now look, John, about the $3,000...
Talk to you later, Charlie. Right now I gotta get over to that paddock bar and see what use I can make of Mort Fisher's garrulity.
His what?
Don't look shocked, Charlie. That just means love of conversation.
Sure, good to see you, Mr. Valentine. You know, I was hoping you'd drop in. How are you, miss?
Hi, Mort.
Say, look, you like to talk, Mort. I thought if we sort of sat around a while, you might remember something Logan said last night that could help us.
Why didn't you tell me this morning that the police think Mr. Logan bumped off this Potter guy? Then, ironically-like, meeting up with an accident.
Oh, you found out, huh?
Oh, sure. Why, it's in the evening papers, miss. And piling irony on irony.
Yeah?
Look what happens to here, right here in my own bar tonight. Did you ever see anything so, well, fortuitous, you know? Well, look, you know who's sitting down there in the number one booth all by herself?
No, who, Mort?
Why, it's Porter's young wife. She's drowning her sorrows with champagne cocktails. Except she doesn't look too unhappy, if you ask me.
Then you know Mrs. Potter.
That's more of the irony, miss. She used to come in here with Mr. Logan.
Oh, hey, now we're getting somewhere.
But that's not all. 2 minutes after she comes in, that good-looking blonde from the Half Moon shows up. You know, the one who identified Mr. Logan, recognized her from the pictures in the paper.
You run a popular bar here, Mort.
Oh, just thanks. But it's mostly, of course, a location. Last bar on the highway for the next 5 miles.
Don't be so modest, Mort. Say, would you mind keeping Miss Brooks entertained?
Hey, but wait, I have got something else to tell you.
I'll be right back, Mort. Hello, Sheila.
Well, look at you. Sit down, George. I was just getting lonely.
No, thanks. What I've got to say won't take that long. Besides, you got to make another stop.
Do you want to bet I can make it more interesting?
Why did you lie about Logan? You never saw him at the Half Moon Motel. He never reached there.
I like my story better.
The dog race is out over in Florida till 9.
So I made a mistake.
Why did you lie? Did somebody make you do it?
I'm getting fed up with this place. Let's go somewhere else, George.
Or did you frame Logan because he had something on you? Was that jewelry hold up a fake with Logan playing both ends against the middle?
What are you talking about?
I mean, get the insurance money and sell your jewels. So you could pay off characters like Charlie the Bookie.
You know something? I'm betting you could never prove that. Yeah.
Hey, where are you going? Oh, Mr.
Mr. Valentine.
Tell me, Mrs. Potter, what kind of a job did you hire Logan to do for you?
I made one slip today with your secretary. That's par for the course.
Your husband was some 30 years older than you. You stood a lot to gain by his death.
Go on, you're doing the talking.
If Logan had anything to do with it, you'd want him out of the way, too, wouldn't you?
Sorry, Mr. Valentine, but you bore me. Good night.
Well, what'd you find out, George?
Tell you later, Brooksy.
You didn't let me finish before, Mr. Valentine.
What's that, Mort?
You know, talking about quirks of fate, last night, about a half hour before he left, I was right here at the bar, you know, with Mr. Logan.
So you said.
And who should come in from for a short quick window but Mr. Potter? Now, I know it was him from his pictures.
Did you hear what they talked about?
Oh, they didn't so much as converse. I don't think Mr. Logan even knew the guy.
Oh, you must be wrong, Mort.
Or you could be very right, which is something I want to talk to Riley about. Now, let's see if we can nail him before he leaves the Half Moon Motel.
Why didn't we take the car, George?
Well, it's just a short walk, Angel.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to have time to think. Try and make some sense out of this thing. So it doesn't sound too fantastic to Lieutenant Riley.
Mm. Better keep his eye on the road, darling.
Yeah. Brooksy, when we get to the motel, call Maggie at home.
Yes, George?
Tell her to meet us at Logan's office. There's just one thing I want to clear up. Then I think we'll have this thing lit.
George, look out, that car!
Get out the car!
Hey, you all right, Angel?
Oh, so this is what gravel tastes like.
And that car was trying to run us down. The same thing that happened to Logan.
Yeah, and almost in the same place.
A baby blue convertible, a big one.
Say, I noticed that before. Parked on the lot next to the paddock bar.
And that's where we're going right now. Tell me something, Mort.
Hey, yeah, Mr. Valentine?
In the short time I was away, did you notice whether Mrs. Potter or Mrs. Cronin left your place?
Can't say with any exactitude, Mr. Valentine.
Oh.
But it seems I do remember both ladies being up and moving around. Of course, we're crowding up now and...
Oh, Lieutenant George. Lieutenant Riley's going to stop by here and pick up the two, ladies. And I left that message for Maggie to be over at Logan's office. And that baby blue convertible of Mrs. Potter's is still in the parking lot.
Good, good. Now, if we don't find out what really happened, we never will.
Okay, Valentine, what's your story? The one we got says Logan killed Potter, and the commissioner likes that version, too.
Just a minute, Lieutenant. Oh, Brooksy,
call
into the outer office and see if Maggie's ready to take all this down.
Okay, George. So you think this is a photo finish between me and Mrs. Potter? Is that it, George, dear?
Lieutenant Riley, I've answered this man's questions all day. Do I have to go through this now?
If you don't mind, Mrs. Potter, yes.
You ready, Maggie?
Yes, Miss Brooks.
Okay, go ahead, George.
Okay, Riley, here's the way I see it. Joe Logan makes a deal with a woman who always needs money because she bets too much. Cooks up a deal with her to cheat the insurance company, then blackmails her.
But I didn't kill him.
Logan also talks to a pretty young matron, much younger than her husband.
So you think I'm pretty? Thank you, Mr. Valentine.
She wants Logan to help her get rid of her husband without involving her, and so she can still get a big chunk of his money.
I discussed that with Logan. That's as far as it went.
Keep going, Valentine.
Well, a wonderful plan is born, Lieutenant. Somebody makes an appointment for Logan to meet Potter at the Half Moon Motel. When Potter arrives, he's murdered. Then Logan is deliberately run down on the road. And you know, Lieutenant, dead men tell no tales.
Yes, that much we know.
Yes, do get to the point, George.
Then enters what Mort would call the ironical touch. We're told that Logan and Potter had a violent quarrel the very day of the murder. Who should know better than the secretary who overheard it? Is that right, Maggie?
That's right, Mr. Valentine.
Then Mr. Potter does a very human thing. On the way to his appointment, which he knows he has to do with his wife, he stops in for a quick drink at Mort's bar.
He stands almost next to Logan, but they don't say a word to each other, because they've never met before.
Look, you got to make more sense than this, Valentine, because I don't get it.
Oh, you'll get this, Lieutenant. Why were we told there was a quarrel? Because that would supply the motive for Logan to kill Potter. And who'd know enough about Sheila to force her to place Logan at a motel when he wasn't there at all?
A lot of questions, Mr. Valentine. How about some answers?
Coming to that, Mrs. Potter, coming to that. But just one final question. If Logan were proved as your husband's murderer, who would be in the position to hold you up for the rest of your life?
What?
Someone who had the proof that you were dickering with Logan. Maybe you weren't talking murder, but it might sound like it. Getting all this down, Maggie? You got that proof, haven't you? That's why you committed two murders.
Maggie!
Didn't you, Maggie?
Yes. You've got your facts all straight, Mr. Valentine. They make a wonderful confession. I may as well sign it now.
Here's one more proof, Mr. Valentine, about life being ironical.
What's that, boy?
Oh, George, I don't know if I can stand much more irony in one case.
Well, just after you left, I mean after you asked me about Mrs. Potter and Mrs. Cronin, I checked with the waiters.
And?
They said neither one of the ladies left the place at all. And there you were, suspecting the both of them.
Well, that's all cleared up now.
Yeah, there was another lady who borrowed Mrs. Potter's car, Mort. She tried to run us down. We were getting a little too close to the truth for her comfort.
Hey, you know, folks, we've been through a whole lot together. Say, how about dinner tonight with me, you know, on the house?
Hey, how about that, Brooksy?
Oh, I think that would be perfectly ironical.
Good, good. Maybe we can stir up some exciting conversation. It gets awfully dull around this place sometimes.
Dull?
Oh, Mort, you can't mean that.
So help me, Miss Brooks. I don't know why you're giving me that look of quizzicality.
I'd be willing to bet there's not one car owner in 1,000 who could lubricate his car thoroughly. For there are more than 20 vital wear points on the average car, and if most of us tried to find them, it would be pure guesswork. Even the expert lube men at the independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations don't rely on experience alone when they grease your car. Instead, they follow a precise lubrication chart recommended by the manufacturer of your car. And they use RPM greases and oils, each one tailor-made to protect those key wear points. Tailor-made, too, to smooth out road shocks and give you easier riding. So for low-cost maintenance and better riding, get a lube job with RPM greases every 1,000 miles. Get it at a standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say and mean, we'll take better care of your car. Next week, when you tune our way for another adventure of George Valentine, you'll hear Lieutenant Riley saying...
Now, Valentine, you say your client was held up Tuesday night at 7 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
Well, according to this report, the only crimes that took place in our fair city on Tuesday night were a pickpocket apprehended at 7th and Duncan, and...
What's the matter, Lieutenant?
I should have remembered myself. The Hafey murder... Killer still at large. Victim previously married to... Here. Here, Valentine, you can have the honor. You've earned it.
George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Let George Do It stars Robert Bailey as George with Francis Robinson as Claire. Wally Mayer appears as Lieutenant Riley. Tonight's story was written by David Victor and Herb Little Jr. and directed by Don Clark. Also heard in the cast were Gloria Blondell as Sheila Cronin, Virginia Gregg as Vivian Potter, Betty Lou Gerson as Maggie, Dick Ryan as Mort, and Tony Barrett as Charlie. The music is composed and conducted by Eddie Dunstan. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Boys, no control. Anyway.
Hi, babe.
Hello, nurse!
Proceeding has been...
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.